Some stations on shortwave sound like they've been around since the dinosaur era, presenting stories the way they did in the 160s, 70s, and 80,000 years ago. Snap out of your Mesozoic mood and switch to Radio Netherlands, contemporary continental radio from the heart of Northwest Europe.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks via PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another program from the media network Vintage Radio Archives. Yes, the sound of the sea, complete with seagulls, and yet there's no sea for at least 100 kilometres from here. That effect actually emanates from a loudspeaker at the start of an exhibition currently running at the Netherlands Broadcasting Museum on the south side of Hilversum in Holland. It's actually 35 years since the idea of Dutch language offshore broadcasting was born, and 20 years ago since the passage of the Dutch Marine Broadcasting Offences Law, which put an end to commercial radio in the Netherlands, at least temporarily, before land-based licences for AM and FM were granted at the end of last year. Arno Veltens is the designer of this rather unique exhibition, celebrating the days of offshore radio. He explains that when it comes to the pop pirates off the Dutch coast, plans were being drawn up by a group of radio set dealers as early as October 1959.
That's the Veronica story. They thought there was a monopoly about the Philips equipment sold here in Holland, and they thought it might be a good idea to have some import from outside. There was a special way of dealing with taxes, and they could sell radios cheaper at that time. That was the main idea, and then they thought, well, it might be a nice idea to have a ship just outside the territorial waters, make some radio and also commercials, because that's the special thing about offshore stations. They were commercial stations.
Was it then forbidden to carry commercials on the Dutch domestic radio?
At that time, yeah.
So what did they do? I mean, it was quite an undertaking. They wanted to, as it were, circumvent the Dutch broadcasting law, and they had to do that by going on a ship outside territorial waters.
That's true. At first they looked at the format used by the English service and the Dutch service of Radio Luxembourg. But afterwards, when one of the most famous DJs, Willem van Kooten, well known as Joost de Draaier, he went to America and he saw the situation there and he took it over to Holland.
Where did the name Veronica come from? It's a girl's name, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a story about a black sheep called Veronica, but I'm not sure and familiar. At first there was another name. It was called the VROM, the Vrije Radio Omroep Nederland.
And it started obviously in the Dutch language, but very few people know that it also had an English service too.
Yeah, at first it was very hard because all the money put in by sponsors was the equipment and the ship, and there was no money left. So what they did, they tried to do an English service in 1961 called CNBC. And there's one of the slogan, come your friendly host on the Dutch coast. But it was only for a short while.
And what did CNBC stand for?
For Commercial Neutral Broadcasting Company.
Radio Veronica, het station waar muziek in zit.
Now, next to this huge map you've got of the North Sea and the actual positions of the ship, you've also got a glass case, and looking in that glass case, some very important things as far as transmitters are concerned, the crystal, I suppose the thing that actually makes it a transmitter as opposed to just a heap of metal.
Yeah.
These original crystals for the frequencies, what, yep. 1680, 1561, 1520?
I'm not sure if they used all these frequencies, but they come from the first ship called the Borkum Riff.
Right, and next to it, one of the old Mercury rectifiers, and some tapes too. In fact, original tapes of also CNBC.
That's true, and also the one of the first commercial programs by an aspirin called Aspro.
Been lowered, a pistol. Were they worried about getting attacked?
No, there was only one station, and this was later on, there was Capital Radio, and they were armed, but this is only for emergency.
So it's for flares?
It's for flares, this one.
Right, I see. And actually attached to some of the glass cases, you've got a pair of headphones. Let me just push the microphone next to the headphones.
Luisteraars, een goedenavond op deze tweede kerstdag. Ja, Ditmaal komt het toevallig zo uit. Nashville met Kerstmis.
This weekend, where the action is.
Meer nieuws over de Radio Veronica London City Quadro Drive-In Show. Vanavond komen wij in Egmond aan de Hoef in het Rode Hert met Hans Mond en Jos Bakker. Dat begint om 8 uur. Morgenavond komen we in Nibbikswoud in Hotel Restaurant Anxious met Tom Collins en Frans van der Beken.
Plenty of sound of the 60s and early 70s. You've also got plenty of pictures too, and looking at some of these pictures, these names, in fact, are names that are still around in broadcasting today.
That's true. Here, for instance, that's Tineke de Nooy, Willem van Koden, Ad Wouwman, he was a technician, and here is Harmon Season. He is now with the Dutch news on television. Right. You could become a member at that time for just one guilder.
So you're the only member of the Veronica organization?
Yep. And the main sponsors were the brothers Verwij, and they sold textile. That was their main interest.
So no doubt they probably made T-shirts.
No, now socks and things. And they imported them from other countries. But at first, the commercial, I already explained to you, that the first period of Veronica, it was very difficult for them. And then they made their own commercials. So everybody thought that these were firms who were paying for it. But there was one central heating company in Loosdrecht. I was astonished by the many times it became on the air. But it was their brother-in-law with this firm.
So very much a family business.
Yes, a family business. But later on, then the big sponsors came and the commercials came.
Many of the stations, in fact, are very short-lived. But Veronica started, what, in 1960 and went on for how many years?
14. And then in August 74... when the Dutch version of the Marine Offences Bill went along, it's also known as the Strasbourg Treaty. There were three stations at that time, Veronica, Atlantis and Radio Noordzee.
And they all closed down by the law. Yeah. Let's go to the cabinet next to us. Lots of publicity material too, because that was very important, getting the word out about the radio station. Buttons I see here, as well, of course, QSL cards.
Yep.
Some of the original mixing desk here as well. A lot of paraphernalia. Was it difficult to collect?
Well, there are always freaks around, no matter what kind of material, even with paper clips or things like that, there are collectors.
Including collectors of some of the early radios, because you mentioned that Radio Veronica was set up by the radio dealers, or a group of radio dealers. They also produced their own radio.
Yeah, this was a very hard item to get. Because that's a radio, and you could only hear Radio Veronica on it, and there was no other station.
It's permanently tuned to 1562 kilohertz.
That's true. Yep, that's true.
Lovely thing. The transistor radio model VR608.
V-E-R-O-N-E-C-R, Radio Veronica.
Okay, let's move further around. And I presume the whole exhibition is in chronological order, is it?
That's true, yeah. We start with Veronica and we end with Radio Monique was the last one.
So far.
So far, yeah.
But where did the programmes come from? Obviously they were being transmitted from the ship, but were there people out there actually making the programmes?
No, at first they came from studios at land, and the Veronica, for instance, they had their premises not far from here in the center of Hilversum, and the DJs were working there, and most of the offshore stations were dealing with in the same way.
So they all somebody tapes big old reels of tape.
Yeah, and then they tendered it to the ship, and then it was transmitted. And then in 65, that was then the first programs for Veronica came straight from board.
The Rolling Stones, The Who, The Move, Simon & Garfunkel, Spencer Davis Group, The Walker Brothers, The Four Seasons, all your golden oldies on 192.
Veronica, remember.
Many people in Holland remember the 2nd of April 1973, when a Force 13 storm blew the ship onto the beach at Scheveningen. Thousands went to have a look at the stranded pirate ship.
And there was one peculiar incident. If you look at the documentaries, we have two videotapes also playing in this part of the museum. If there are shots of the Northern Eye, you never see a flag. But there are two flags here, one of Guatemala and one of Haiti. And as you see in the incident of the sort of landing on the shore, and then you see suddenly a flag.
So when they were broadcasting from the high seas, they didn't put up their flag of convenience, but when they came ashore because of the wind, they made sure it was flying.
Yeah, and that had something to do with the authorities and the legal matter of it.
So in other words, they could prove it was sort of foreign territory.
Yeah, foreign territory, yeah.
There does seem to be a contrast, though, because you've got a number of ships broadcasting off the Dutch coast, very few off the Belgian coast.
Yeah, one of them was Radio Antwerp, because we're also dealing with the Flemish station, because it's also a Dutch language as we see it. And this man started in 62. It was Georges de Caluwey. He was a former pioneer. He had a station before the Second World War.
Quite an old chap. I mean, he was 73 at the time.
He was 73 at the time, yeah. He started just outside the Belgium coast with Radio Antwerp on a ship called, a vessel called Uilenspiegel.
There's a beautiful photograph on the exhibition stand here because it looks a bit like sort of public broadcasting in the 1950s. The disc jockey sitting there with a collar and tie.
Yeah, it looks like. That is Peter de Jager. At that time they didn't call him a disc jockey, but they call him a presenter.
And it also played not just pop music, too.
No, also classical music and a sort of French march music. Yeah.
Good gracious. Let's have a listen, because you've got a pair of headphones here. Again, push it near to the microphone.
Dit is Radio Antwerpen van op het schip Uilenspiegel op de Noordzee. De zender waar u naar luistert.
Put the headphones back. It didn't last, though, very long, did it?
No, from October till December 62. But the vessel, the Uilenspiegel, that was in Zeeland, which is one of the provinces of Holland, and the remains of it lasted 30 years. So lots of people who went to the sea have seen this ship.
So in other words, it came ashore, did it, during a storm?
During a storm, yes.
Now we move a little bit further on the exhibition, and here we see a television studio, a very rudimentary television studio. Where was this? Because, I mean, you've heard of radio broadcasting, but not much about television.
Yeah, that is the famous Radio and TV North Sea, but better known as the Rem Island. It was just outside Noordwijk. People thought it might be a good idea to put a platform there and start not only commercial radio, but also commercial television.
So they actually built a sort of artificial island, as it were?
Yeah. It was built in Ireland, and then it came over by a special boat and put just outside Noordwijk.
At that time, there was only one Dutch public television network on the air, although a second was being considered. The commercial television programmes, beamed inland from the offshore platform, could be received within the Triangle, Utrecht, Amsterdam and Rotterdam. But viewers, of course, had to buy a special antenna and point it in a completely different direction.
It's peculiar because, although at that time there was Radio Veronica dealing with it, but the main threat for Dutch authorities came from this TV. And they started legal actions between it, and they found a sort of construction in which it was possible to, after 3 or 4 months, to close it down.
So there was a difference then between broadcasting from a vessel and broadcasting from an artificial island?
Yes, I'm not familiar with the legal details, but that's true.
And once again, the exhibition not only has some of the original equipment, these marvellous old gramophone record players as well. And as we move around the exhibition, we see lots of photographs of a famous day, the 17th of December 1964, when the Dutch authorities decided to take some action.
Yeah, and then the police and the marine and also what we call the PTT, the people who were dealing with transmitters, they came along with ships and 3 helicopters and they entered the platform. And that was it. But although it was a 3.5 month period of the Rem adventure, the Radio and TV North Sea had about 3 million guilders commercial funds.
So this was profit that they'd made while they were on the air?
Yeah. And what they did in September, they thought that it might be a nice idea to look to have some members, and then they decided to change the name in TROS, so become a member of the TROS, which is still one of the broadcasting companies at the moment in Holland.
Although it's interesting that they're a public broadcaster and they started with a commercial.
Yeah, they started illegal, but that's the same with Veronica later on.
Okay, now behind you, you've got a very interesting story of a radio station started by the IBS, the International Broadcasting Society, so-called Capital Radio. It didn't last very long, but it has a marvellous history.
Yeah, especially about the people who were on board. Most of them were girls, and they were specially dressed. The crew was specially dressed in uniforms. It had the King David, which was the vessel, had a ring-shaped antenna, which is very peculiar. It's a former design of the BBC. And Capital Radio, the crew members, were armed. And what's also very interesting, this is the only marine ship of Liechtenstein, because that was the flag they were under.
A flag of convenience. Also, they had, at least one of the announcers, had a very English accent.
And this ship also washed ashore in, I thought it was November in 70.
Again, so it didn't last very long. Let's have a listen to some of the output by, again, listening to the headphones.
This transmission from Capital Radio. Capital Radio transmits on 1115 kilohertz, 270 meters in the medium wave band. Broadcasting from the motor vessel King David, anchored in international waters. Reception reports should be addressed to the Chief Engineer, Capital Radio, P.O. Box 270, Bussum, spelt B-U-S-S-U-M, Holland. Do drop us a line, won't you?
The sound of the 70s there, in fact, the period May to November 1970. We move further on, the beautiful model here of the ship that housed Radio Nordsee.
Yeah, the ship called Mabo 2, and it was owned by Swiss financiers called Meister and Bollier. The end was very turbulent. At the beginning, there's also a very good story about the way they operated. At first, they started with German and English in the English language. And there was a deal with the organization of Veronica. Veronica, the Brothers Verwij, paid 1 million guilders in 1970. There was only one restriction, that it was not allowed for them to put on Dutch commercials or Dutch programs.
So in other words, they paid off the opposition, as it were.
That's true.
220! Radio Nordsee!
Okay, moving further on, we're very much into the 70s, aren't we? We just mentioned Radio Nordsee International. Some beautiful photographs here. Also some paraphernalia, in other words, the tapes, QSL cards, posters.
Lots of posters. We only put a few of them on because some of them were quite damaged because the sellotape was still on it, or the pins, the holes of the pins. But there were that was one of the things they deal with. It. Lots of posters and also stickers.
Yeah, right. It always goes together with pirate radio ships. There's always a sticker. Okay, we'll move further around. Again, another video that's running in the background. Probably hear the whispers in the background. Oh, also the tapes. I mean, this is one thing that's synonymous with offshore broadcasting. There are always tapes, there are always records coming out, even 10, 20, 30 years after these stations have gone off the air.
Not only for Dutch offshore stations, but also for English, because at that time you were listening to all stations, also including the English ones, like Radio London. It didn't matter. There were some people still coming here to this exhibition from England, and they could speak marvelous Dutch, and they just bought a dictionary at that time so they could translate and understand the Dutch language.
Okay, we move further around the exhibition. Caroline, now did that actually broadcast in Dutch?
Yeah. Romantisch vandaag. Het is op dit ogenblik bijna anderhalve minuut over drie. Je luistert naar Caroline op 319 meter middengolf, 963 kilohertz.
Big man behind the project, Ronan O'Reilly, had always difficulties in finding people and financiers. And from January till June 73, and even from April 79 till March 1980, there was a Dutch service on board.
Again, the disc jockeys involved are all heavily involved in Dutch broadcasting today. Rob Hudson, that seems to be a name that's familiar. In fact, the real name, Ruud Hendricks, is now running NBC Soup Channel. So, again, they all end up somewhere in broadcasting.
What's also very interesting in this glass cabinet is the way they got a message from the ship to the organization on land.
There's a sort of code, because there's a piece of paper here with, for example, 90 was the code for leak has been repaired. And if they said 91 on the air, it meant that there was a defective pump.
Yeah, and 105 for bad weather. So everybody knew that there were some difficulties or they had to put the tender out.
And there were people then listening to this on shore, listening out for these secret messages?
Normally, they did it just before or after the news.
Well, kiddies, it's 5 o'clock.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Dave. More Top 50 after the news. Following the fire on board this radio ship, Mevo 2, last night, three men have been arrested in Amsterdam. The men have been charged with planting a bomb on board the ship, which started an intense fire which has burnt out most of the after ship structure.
Was it easy to put this exhibition together?
Yeah, there's especially by the help of Hans Knot. He is the expert on Dutch offshore MER. Very glad to have him here.
And so we walk round to the last quarter of the exhibition. Other names too, Mi Amigo. That was run by a Belgian, Sylvian Tack, if I remember rightly.
That's true, and he put up the project, and it's not only the station name, it's also the name of the vessel they used. And because they operated from 74 to 78, they had to be smart on the tendering service, and they went, actually the shooters went to Spain in Playa de Aro, and then they made their programs there.
But why the Spanish connection then?
Because Spain didn't sign the Strasbourg Treaty, and from 74, August 74, it was forbidden for Dutch or English people to be in any way connected with these offshore stations, either as a supplier or a DJ or a financier or even for a commercial like Coca-Cola or whatever. They couldn't, it was illegal. So they went to Spain, but the tendering service, they came from Belgium. And that was an illegal action.
Okay, let's have a listen. Again, a pair of headphones.
Dus we gaan eens even naar Frank toe in de kombuis.
Ja, Mark, we staan even in de keuken, de kombuis van de trouwe MV Mi Amigo. En naast ons staat onze charmante kokkin Bridget, die ons even precies gaat vertellen wat wij vanavond gaan eten hier. What are we having for dinner tonight? Kom hier. Ze durft niet, ze is een beetje verlegen.
Turkey, we're having turkey and we're having ham. Vol-au-vent and
sugar. Rachel's preparing the Christmas dinner there on Radio Mi Amigo. Further round, you've got Del Mar. That was a very strange, very short-lived operation, wasn't it?
They used four vessels in a very short period. It had to do with the mismanagement of the organization. Everything went wrong. And as you see in the pictures as well, the equipment, well, you couldn't compare it with either Mi Amigo or Radio Veronica or Radio Noordzee.
Very rough and ready, to say the least.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at the studios, they look indeed as though they've been put together with sort of a bad DIY expert rather than somebody who's trying to build a radio station.
Yep, that's
right. Okay, let's move on to the final part of the exhibition. Again, parts of transmitters from Radio Paradise. Now, that's a very interesting project because that really started in the 80s, and it's something that actually never went on the air.
No, there was as you could see in this glass cabinet, the financiers behind this project, they had about 1.5 million guilders in foreign currency to be paid off to the people who put on the mast and the transmitters and whatever.
And this was the ship, the Magna Maria?
This was the Magna Maria in 81.
But the Dutch authorities went in and stopped that project?
Yeah, they just entered the ship. They dragged it to Holland.
And there it sort of basically rotted away slowly because there were various court cases going ahead, which in fact the owners eventually won. But by that time the ship was just rotten and there was no interest in the project anymore.
That's true.
Okay, thanks for showing us round. What about if people want to come see this for themselves? And when is the exhibition open?
It's open from Tuesday till Friday, from 10 till 1700 hours. And in the weekend, which means Saturday and Sunday, from 12 till 1700 hours.
And this is, of course, a temporary exhibition. It's not going to be here permanently.
No, it was opened off the 4th of June, and the last day is 4th September.
So what happens in the museum here generally, then? What's your next exhibition after that?
Then we're dealing with the first Dutch radio stations, but they were only amateurs.
So you're talking about sort of 1919 and It's a Dinner, people like that?
Yep.
So what sort of response have you had so far to this? Because this is quite unique, isn't it? They're having an exhibition about offshore pirate radio.
You could easily, if you walk around the museum, you could easily see the what we call the freaks coming to this exhibition. And we've never had so much foreign people coming over. Because although you are not far from Amsterdam, it isn't a place where tourists will go to. Although we had, this is the first year we're here in this premises, and we had now 65,000 people, visitors, coming to this museum.
You're keeping radio alive, too, because you're using extracts and also in other parts of the exhibition, the permanent part. You let people touch things, you let people feel things, you let people, in fact, read the news.
Yeah, that's true.
OK, well, thank you very much for showing us around, and good luck with the exhibition.
OK.
Media Network is a Radio Netherlands presentation. Copyright 1994.
Some stations talk to the world. Radio Netherlands talks to people.
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website.
This is Media Network with Jonathan Marks,
where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.
I regret to inform you this recording is now officially over.